Good morning. I am Tim Morrison, the host of Right Here, Right Now, a weekly internet radio show. We interview business leaders, entrepreneurs, and professionals about their work and the book they have written, are in the process of writing, or intend to write someday. Right Here, Right Now is brought to you by Right Choice Services, a company that coaches individuals as they write their first book or their second or their third or whatever book. My co-host for the program is Stone Payton, a vital cog at Business Radio X. You love me to say that.
I like vital. Yeah, I like that.
Well, you are. And you have your own show. They even let you loose on High Velocity Radio, don't they?
Yeah. It's fun stuff. We interview a lot of neat people, and sometimes we interview people that should be on your show, too. Just yesterday, we had this hot new author named Glenn Carver. I want him to come on your show and talk about his stuff sometime. So I'll get you the info on him. But on all these shows, everybody you talk to, they really know their stuff, and they're very passionate about their work. I mean, it's just a lot of fun to be around upbeat people that are enjoying their work, isn't it?
Well, I'm liking you to say that because I was one of your guests back in October, and look where it got me.
That's right. Now you're famous.
Well, we're working on it. We're working on it. Well, as usual, we have two dynamic guests this morning. We've got Mary and Jack Branson with us. Mary has been a writer all of her life. And Jack has not, but he is now. And in fact, Jack was a special agent with the U.S. Treasury Department. Does that get a chill going for you?
Absolutely.
And you also spent some time with the Secret Service?
Yes.
Oh. We're going to have fun. And we also have in the studio with us their grandson, Taylor LeBaron, who was with us about 4 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago. He's here to make sure that Grandma and Grandpa speak the truth. I think that's what it is, okay? So, well, as I mentioned to them before we went live, I always like to go with ladies first, so we'll just keep that up. Mary, it is so good to have you here.
Thank you very much. It's good to be here.
And what makes it special for me, at least, is you and I have been emailing for about 2-3 years, and now we finally get to see each other.
First time today.
Yeah. Well, you have written children's books. You've written books on finance and stewardship. You've written fiction. You've written nonfiction. And that's been your career, right?
My first book was published when I was 25. And
that was just yesterday,
yes,
right?
Yes, just a couple of years ago. Now, Taylor, if you're going to be honest here, this is not the time to do it. But I've always wanted to write. When I was in school, when other kids would groan when there was a term paper, I would groan too to be like everybody else. But underneath, I'd be thinking, yes, because I love to write. Always did.
Oh, you are one of those weird ones.
Yes.
Even though I'm writing now, I didn't enjoy term papers at all. What made you see that that's what you wanted to do, or what did you enjoy about it?
Well, you know, I think one of the main things is the ability to influence other people with your opinions. And you can do that with fiction or you can do it with nonfiction. It's exciting. It's exciting to know that if you have an opinion, you can pass it on to other people and have that effect on them. But, you know, I always, when I was younger, I never thought you could make a living at writing. I'm still not sure you can.
There you go.
I thought of all the other occupations I could have because I thought no one could ever make a living at writing. And for years, I wrote alongside of another position. I was director of editing at a national company. I was director of marketing at a national company. I was a children's minister at a church. And all along, I was writing.
Mm-hmm.
But finally, I thought, you know, let's just chuck it all and let's just try writing full time. And that's when it became exciting. That's when it became something that you could do during your high energy time instead of after an 8-hour day at work.
Oh, there you go. I understand that one. Well, what was that first book back when you were 25?
I wrote a woman's devotional book.
Wow.
And the way I decided to write it, I was reading a woman's devotional book. And in the middle of it, I thought, you know, I could do this. You know, why aren't I doing it? Mm-hmm. You know I like to write. I know I could do this. And I closed that book and I started to write. And I just wrote about my children who were then preschoolers. And I just wrote about what I knew, because I think we all do that, even with fiction. Mm-hmm. We're writing what we know.
Yeah.
And I just wrote from my heart what I knew and sent it to a bazillion publishers, and finally somebody took it. And that was the beginning.
And that implies that you received one or two or 20 or 30 rejection letters.
Oh, you know, every writer has to be ready for that. Mm-hmm. That's just part of writing. Because just like if you have five friends who all see a movie. There's going to be some who say, that was a great movie. You know, it's one of the best. It's going to be Academy Award winner. Other people are going to think, you know, I wished I'd saved my money. Everyone has a different opinion. And publishers have different opinions. And they have niches, you know, that they publish for. So because you receive a rejection from one person does not mean that your material's not good. And I know Chicken Soup for the Soul, where that was the publisher that Taylor's book was published under, they had 113 rejections before they found the right publisher. Yeah.
And that's a significant number. You know, the story I share, and I've said it on this show before, that what was to be my first book became my third one after 3 rewrites and 27 rejection letters in 13 years. So we all go through that. And I find that with when I work with my clients, they can't understand that concept of rejection. But if you're going to be a writer, you got to be in love with rejection, kind of, don't you?
You do. And I think you have to learn from them. I still remember the phrasing on one rejection letter I got from this devotional book. And it said, it is too didactic and curricular. And so I went to the dictionary.
To figure out what you have done. Huh?
Right. And I thought, you know, I can become defensive and I can say, you know, take it or leave it, or I can get it published.
Mm-hmm.
And I looked at it and rewrote it and did a lot of softening, became more subtle in what I was saying instead of hammering the points across, because I figured that's what they meant by didactic.
Yes.
But that's what you have to do. You know, if you look at it and you say, well, you know, take it or leave it, they'll leave it.
Yes, they will. Yeah, I had a major publisher reject one of my manuscripts, but I got more than just the standard rejection. I got a comment on it. And what the person said was, it sounded as if I was defending something. And that really opened my eyes. And much like you, I went back and I rewrote that and I softened it. And then I was able to get it published. So there is some virtue and value in that.
Absolutely.
Now, did either one of you at some point in that rejection, getting all those rejections, did you decide maybe I'll just self-publish? Or was this sort of before the big onset of the self-publishing craze?
Well, for me, that was before self-publishing, because I had been writing for a long, long time. And at that point, you didn't have an agent. Now we have an agent. But at that point, you didn't have an agent. You just sent it directly to the publishers. And that's all we knew to do. So, yeah, and there are some valid reasons to self-publish. There are some valid reasons to go through an agent. And there are some valid reasons to go with a small publisher that doesn't require an agent. And we have not self-published, but we have used small publishers when we had a niche book that we felt like was not going to be appealing to a large crowd, but it was important. And then we've used an agent.
And in my own case, I allowed my ego to get in the way. Self-publishing wasn't as accepted then as it is now, and so I was not going to be one of them. So I just persevered until I found publishers. But my last book that I used a publishing company, but it was essentially self-publishing. And so I wanted to get that feel so that I can help my clients with that. Well, you shifted from first person singular to first person plural, so we probably ought to bring Jack in on this, don't you think?
Good idea.
Jack, special agent, secret service, private eye, and writer.
I followed in Mary's footsteps. Law enforcement was always my first love, but when I saw how much Mary enjoyed writing at a young age, when I retired, it just seemed natural that we would do it together, because we've always enjoyed doing things together. But law enforcement was my early love.
Well, I'm in awe of what you've said about she. You saw how much she enjoyed it. My kids are now 26 and 30, but they would watch Dad writing and they say, "Oh man,
you never want to do that.
Don't want to do that." And now they're grinding out graduate papers, but. What did she just kind of have you buffaloed, or how did that happen?
Well, I knew we went to high school together. We were high school sweethearts, and I knew that she had the talent and the love for writing in high school. She won a writing award and was recognized when she graduated from high school for winning that. And I was one of those kids that always groaned when the teacher said, "Do a term paper." And so I knew that she had this ability. And then when we were married several years and the first book came out, and I saw how much she enjoyed it, and we were writing together at that time Sunday school curriculum for kids.
Really?
And that was the beginning of our writing together as a when we were younger. And I really enjoyed it. And I always have loved to read. And watching Mary write and seeing how it's done, and it really, I think, rubbed off on me. And I really enjoy our time together doing that now.
You want to defend yourself or support him on that, your comment?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, we have, and I will say one thing. Jack has always written with me. He just didn't get his name on the book.
Oh, okay.
I will admit that because he's probably the best editor that I've ever seen. And everything I would write, he would edit. And he can be very cruel, but he's very constructive as well. And he can spot errors. And, you know, when you're sending something to a publisher, back years ago, there just wasn't the competition there is now. Because
right.
with computers and emailing manuscripts, there's a lot more writers out there. And you have to have it in tip-top shape.
Sure you
and you can't have typos. You know, they're not going to fool with it. You know, some books go out. In fact, our last book, they had two editors, a copy editor and a proofreader on it. But nothing was changed. It went out like we produced it.
Mm-hmm.
So if
That's
I needed...
That's phenomenal.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that we were very pleased because with Taylor's book, we did a lot of rewriting. It's all according to the publisher.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and the publisher thought, well, let's change the format. So we did practically wrote another book after it was accepted. But before we send a proposal, we want everything perfect as we
mm-hmm.
can make it.
Mm-hmm.
And Jack has always been that part of the process.
He's when not cruel. He's didactic.
Yeah, and curricular.
Well, I'm thinking more it's that private investigator. You look for everything, don't you? Details
yes.
and all. And that's what, in a way, that's what you bring to the writing.
Yes, I think so. I think the experience in law enforcement really helps, and looking for the details like that,
mm-hmm.
that really has helped in writing.
What I appreciate you're saying, Mary, and this is another curious thing that I run into with a lot of my clients, when they give me their manuscript to look at, I proceed to edit it and suggest that they need to do a second or third draft, and they're aghast. But writers rewrite, do they not?
Oh, my goodness. If I had known that when I started writing, I would have been a much better writer. I groan now when I look at what I used to write because I would, back when I used a typewriter, you know, one mm-hmm. time and I was finished with it. And now we write and rewrite and rewrite and rewrite. And up until we send it off, you can still find ways to improve it.
Oh, sure. And Jack, that would not be a problem for you because I would assume because as an investigator doing the work that you did, you just have to be meticulous.
Exactly. You have to go where the evidence takes you. And many times you come to a dead end and have to turn around and start over. And the same in doing a criminal report. Every case that we had in the federal system that goes to court, we had to do a detailed report, and many times you have to redo those. So I was used to that aspect of writing.
Well, Taylor, let me bring you in. I said Stone would probably do it, and here am I doing it. Your grandfather said he watched your grandmother write and decided he wanted to be a part of that. Is that what happened to you, or did they say, boy, have we got an idea for you?
Well, after I had gone through the entire weight loss journey, and I knew that I had a story. My grandmother, she made that a little bit more pronounced to me and said, you really do have a story. You have potential to write a book here. If you want to just come over one day after school, we can sit down and toss some ideas around. And it started with that, and with both my grandparents' help, it was turned into an actual book, which is
wow.
really cool.
You guys got to be excited about that.
Oh, absolutely, because it was so easy to write Taylor's book.
They knocked it out in an afternoon over milk and cookies.
Just right? about. This guy is the most creative. All we did, basically, was take notes.
Mm-hmm.
His stories and his examples were so powerful. And I think one of the important things about writing is being transparent, if you're writing nonfiction. Taylor was willing to be transparent. He was willing to talk about what it was like to be overweight, what it was like to feel humiliated and embarrassed. And now you see this skinny little kid over here, and you know you just can't imagine that he ever weighed 297 pounds. But when he did, he suffered in school, like not fitting into chairs. and trying to find the one chair that was larger in the classroom. And his book actually starts off with a humiliating experience that he had. And he was willing to do that. And when he was transparent and opened up, all we did was just take notes. You know, many people protect themselves. You know, they want to write a book, but they don't want to show the hurts, the failures. And Taylor was not like that. He was very open.
He went with it.
Told the truth.
That's powerful. Well, what was the first book that the two of you wrote together? How did that come about?
The book was Murder in Mayberry, which is out in hardback and paperback. And it's the story of the murder of my 85-year-old aunt, who is like a second mother to me. And the murder occurred in Kentucky in January 2003. And I was still an agent at the time. And, of course, we wanted to see the perpetrator brought to justice. But we actually got to participate in the investigation and the enjoyment.
That's a little unusual, isn't it?
Well, I think being in law enforcement and having the crime happen in your family, of course, has put you in an unusual position of both wanting to see justice done as a law enforcement officer and also as a family member. And she was very dear to our heart. She was like a second mother to both Mary and me and a second grandmother to our kids or grandchildren. And it was a horrible crime. She was stabbed 97 times, actually. And she was a very young 85-year-old lady. She enjoyed life to the fullest, and she was my mother's older sister.
Well, how did you get yourself involved in that investigation then? Because that would have been done by the jurisdiction initially,
well,
right?
Yes, of course, murder is not a federal crime unless it's a federal official that's murdered, such as the president or so forth. But we stopped by the police department when we went to Kentucky and just to see what they would tell us about this situation. And I had no jurisdiction in this case. It was their case. But the state police detective in Kentucky kept us informed and kept us involved. And we were able to participate in examining some of the evidence and just being involved in getting witnesses, finding people if they needed to be found to assist him. And he kept the case alive and kept the case going. And 4 years later, the trial was held and the perpetrator was brought to justice. And we got to participate heavily in the trial.
And we won't disclose so that people will go out and buy the book and learn it all, right?
That's correct.
I like that idea. Well, which one of you came up with the idea to actually write it?
I think being a writer, as we were driving to Kentucky the day after the murder, I told Jack, I need to write this down. I just need to. And you know, as a writer yourself, there's something that's so consoling about writing and putting down your thoughts. So we began actually on that trip, writing down our thoughts. His first reaction was, let's write it down so we can investigate. Let's be sure that we have all the information so that we can help with the investigation. And sometimes when we were talking to people or Jack was talking to people, I was writing things down, but Jack needed that information to piece the case together. And I was writing feelings. And then eventually the book became a first-person book, and it's really how we started writing together. When the publisher, our agent, called and said, we have a publisher interested in the book, she said, but they want Jack's name on the book, too.
Oh, my.
See, Jack had a lot more clout being a federal agent than I did. And we said, that's an interesting thought. You know, he'd been writing all along, and you'll see that the book's in first person. It was kind of our transition to writing together. The book is in first person by me. I describe things Jack did, but he helped so much with the book. He was heavily involved in the book. So both of our names are on it. And then after that, we just thought, hey, this was fun. You know, we got to be, of course, it was a tragic incident, but we were interviewed together for the book, and we enjoyed doing it together. So the next time we sat down to write a book, we said, let's just do it together from the start.
Well, how did that feel, Jack, when the agent came in and said, we need your name on the book?
I had mixed feelings. Of course, like Mary said, she wrote it about me, and obviously her feelings toward me came out in the book, and it felt kind of funny to have my name on it with that aspect of the book. But I really, I love having both our names on it together because it was a partnership in what we did and our assistance in this investigation and just wanting to see the family see justice done.
Mm-hmm.
So
I'm impressed with your continued statement that you work so well together and you love doing this. I've written 4 books. My wife has read only one of them. And that was because I asked her to do the final edit, and she looked at me and said, "Are you sure?" And I said, "Yeah." Because, you know, when I would write sermons and would make the mistake of saying, "You want to read this through?" And go, why don't you change? "No, I don't want to change that." So I'm just in awe of what you're able to do together. So now you've gone on to write your own book, Jack?
Yes, I have one novel that I wrote, the only book that I've written myself. It's about a group of federal agents, not retired agents, who are terminally ill and who, for various reasons, decide to take the law into their own hands. And we wrote this book on a trip to California back a couple of years ago, and it's Terminal Justice is the title.
Mm-hmm.
And we used a lot of the locales that we like out west. We usually drive out west once a year, such as Tombstone, Arizona, Fort Worth, Texas, Long Beach, California.
Tombstone sounds like a good one for this, but the rest, I mean, that just... Wow. And you slipped into talking about we, but it is your book.
Yes, it is my idea, and it does have violence in it, but it does show that that's not always the best way to go. But mm-hmm. Mary was sitting beside me in the car and would write my ideas down, and I dictated some things to her, but it is my book.
So this would be one of those fiction based upon nonfiction or fact.
That's correct. The agents in the book are actually composites of agents that I used to work with. I even incorporated some of the nicknames of some of the agents that I gave nicknames to that I worked with in the book.
Uh-huh.
It was fun to write.
And have any of those people seen this work?
Yes, they have. One of the characters is a small female that I used to call Whip for Whippersnapper because she was young.
I know that term.
And she has seen the book and others, and I think they took it well.
Well, that's great. What was it like for you, Mary, to be his recording secretary, should we say?
It was actually like a role reversal. It's basically I played the role that Jack played in my early books. I edited him.
Mm.
I gave input, but the book, you know, took his direction. And he's a great plotter. I was just amazed at how he plotted out the story. It was just something. I think I'm a very nonfiction type person, although we are now working on a book that is fiction together.
Oh, my. Well, that brings to mind the concept of voice. That's what jumped into my mind. One of the big things I have to work with my clients is finding their voice. How do you work together? Well, first off, you write, you edit.
Right.
How do you keep her voice in it? He writes, you edit. How do you keep his voice in it? And when you write together, whose voice?
You know, that's an interesting question, a great question, because we seem to be on the same wavelength enough that I know one project we wrote, and we were asking an agent, and she couldn't tell which chapters. Jack wrote some chapters, and I wrote some chapters.
Oh, really?
And she couldn't tell which ones. But I think what happens is we each lend our touch to it.
Mm-hmm.
And by the time we've done that, it comes out very smooth. It comes out sounding the same. A lot of times I do the initial writing, and then Jack comes in and does the rewriting.
Okay. Was that an issue, Taylor, when the voice concept, when your book was being written, there'd be you and them and whoever else? And
no, I never found it to be an issue. Mary's very good at what she does, as well as Jack. They do a wonderful job, and it was something that crossed my mind. I didn't want my words to be taken out of context, and that was something I struggled with. But once I read it, how everything turned out, it was literally just as I said, just with a few commas and rearranging things into a proper chronological order.
So you were able to find your writing voice relatively easy then?
Most certainly, yes. I've developed it over the past 4 years of high school in my literature class, and it's really worked out, and I've never have had a problem, especially with writing my book with my grandparents. I never had an issue with my thoughts or my voice coming out or not coming out for that matter. So.
Oh, that's great. That's great. One of the questions I always throw out to guests is how has writing impacted your business? That'll be kind of a curious one for you two to respond to, since that's what you do. And I don't have a clue as to how writing would help you as an agent.
It really doesn't. My expertise as a PI is to do background investigations, typically things I can do at home using databases. I had a lot of fun when I was an agent during surveillance and all the fun stuff of being in law enforcement. And some PIs, a lot of retired agents are private investigators, and a lot of them still like to get out and do the surveillances and stuff. But I'd rather be with Mary and just enjoy relaxing at home. And our home office is our home during the day when we're not out doing other things, both for writing and PI work. But most of my clients don't know that I'm an author at all.
Wow. And you made the decision. This, we're going to make it or we're not, right?
That's exactly right. But I think in writing, Jack was talking, I was thinking about how important writing is to any career.
Mm-hmm.
And when Jack was an agent, he was one of the better writers, and he was even put on a detail of reviewing other agents' reports for a while to edit them and help them.
Oh my.
Because if you can't write, there's a lot of jobs that are closed to you. And I found that every job that I had during the time that I paralleled a real well-paying career right, with writing, writing was so important. And I would urge anybody, you know, who's beginning their career to get as much writing help as they can, because that comes out, it makes you sound so much more professional.
Oh, yes.
If you can write, if you can. And I think now with kids using all of these abbreviations and slang and stuff, what are they going to do when they get out into the work world and they try to write a memo to a boss? You know,
well,
because
that would be interesting.
It's going to be tough.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, now you have a book out, or it's coming out, Delayed Justice. Tell us about that. That's got two names on it.
Well, it was absolutely a partnership to do this. Delayed Justice, it's inside stories from America's best cold case investigators. This book was not our idea. It was the idea of the editor-in-chief of Prometheus Books.
Oh, my.
And he contacted our agent and said, I want someone to write this book. So she contacted us, and we did some initial work on it, outlined it, told kind of what we would do if we did the book. And we were pleased that they did no major changes on it, because apparently we fulfilled what he wanted. But this book is kind of a hybrid book between a how-to book for investigators and a true crime. And it leans more toward how-to, because what we did was take all of the steps to investigating a cold case. We outlined them in the book, and then we went back and we reinforced each of those steps with an actual cold case. And we interviewed 16 or 17 investigators. They were local investigators, they were NCIS, they were FBI profilers, all of these people, and we got their cases and how they investigated them. So we also have cases everywhere from Florida to Alaska. So there's a big variety. You really get a good picture of cold cases in this. But we enjoyed doing this book. Well, I say enjoyed, and it's sort of like Murder in Mayberry. It was a very tough book to write.
Mm-hmm.
There
mm-hmm.
are children who were murdered and young ladies who were murdered. And people who waited years and years and years for justice. But we enjoyed doing the interviews together, and we just put the phone on speakerphone.
Oh, my.
And we interviewed together. And Jack, who is used to interrogating people, you know, he did all of the questioning, and I was typing along. But we got to do every bit of it together from the beginning. So it was really enjoyable in that sense. But there are some cases in that book that are so haunting and so sad that I still sometimes, just driving along, I'll think of what some of these people went through and how evil people can be.
Now, have any of these been solved?
Yes, they have. And we got to deal with so many good investigators on the local, state, and federal level on this book. It was a joy to interview them, to talk with some of the FBI agents I had worked with when I was an mm-hmm. agent on cases. And it was... that part of it was really enjoyable, but the district attorney in Kentucky who prosecuted the killer of my aunt. Mm-hmm. We interviewed him and some additional cases, as well as the my aunt's case is highlighted in this book as well. But I'm hoping that this will spur smaller police departments and even larger ones and agencies, law enforcement agencies, to put more money into cold case squads when they see what can be done with the money there. North Carolina has its own crime lab, Charlotte, mm-hmm. North Carolina PD. And that was fascinating to me that because of that, they can solve cases faster than us in a state case, because my aunt's case, it took 6 months for DNA tests to come back.
Oh, my.
And Charlotte PD can do it immediately.
What was it like for you to be asking questions, interrogating, if you will? That was the image I got. You probably weren't interrogating. Did you find it a challenge to be friendly author trying to get information while wanting to really bear down?
No, it came pretty naturally. Even in law enforcement, when you're interrogating someone you want to break, obviously you hammer them. But when you're wanting to get information subtly, mm-hmm. which is the majority of the time when you're doing a law enforcement type of questioning, you try to be friendly and all that. But talking to our fellow law enforcement officers was just natural, and it was just fun to do together too.
Okay. Stone, I very rarely put you on the spot, but you've been inordinately quiet this morning.
I thought you were going to say you've been interrogated many times.
No, this is your chance to interrogate. Do you have any questions
friend? I'm fascinated. This whole topic, this whole series of topics just absolutely fascinates me, and this is the real deal, and you just rattled off our entire TV viewing list. At home, we watch Cold Case, NCIS, Criminal Minds. So I'm absolutely fascinated and enthralled by this conversation.
And you're here with live, real people who do these things.
Who really
things.
Know the stuff, yep. I know.
Yeah. Well, here's a toss-up question. How do people get in touch with you if they would like to talk with you or interview you and or buy your books?
Well, we have a website, jackandmarybranson.com. And you can go to that website and you can find out a lot about us. Or you can write to us and you can write to directly to our email. We'd love to hear from you. It's Word Authority, all one word, like Word Author, ITY, Word Authority at bellsouth.net. And whenever we do get an email or a letter from someone who says that our writing has affected them, it's worth it.
It's one of the greatest gifts you can get, isn't it?
Yes. It is.
Yeah. One last question I want to ask it. I get to ask any I want. But I am just proud for you for what you've done with Taylor to encourage him to do what he has done. What advice would you give to listeners if they sense that one of their children or grandchildren have a story to tell?
Well, I think there are three ways that you become a writer. And one is to be a celebrity. And as you know, you can write anything and people will buy it.
Yeah.
The other is to have that desire always to write. And when you do that, you do like I do, and you look for stories. The third is if you have a remarkable story, and you may not be a professional writer, mm-hmm. but in this market, you need professional help. Mm-hmm. And if you have a story and you're not a professional writer, I would say get with somebody. Get with a friend who's a writer. Get with an English teacher friend. Get with someone who can help you get your story in good shape. And that's basically what we did for Taylor. Taylor had a strong, amazing voice, mm-hmm. but we helped him. He's not very fond of punctuation. So we added a lot of commas and a lot of periods, and that's basically what we did for him.
Well, that's great. That's great. Well, once again, as it happens every week, the clock is on us. And I welcome comments and suggestions from those who are listening in about the content and about our guests. And if you would like to recommend a guest or even would like to be a guest yourself on Right Here, Right Now, just let me know. You can send me an email at write now@gmail.com. As always, thank you, Stone, for co-hosting. And, well, you did kind of keep me on track today amidst being taken up by the whole thing, and I'm grateful for that. Thank you, Jack and Mary and Taylor. It was good to have you back, Taylor. It was good to finally meet you guys and have an extended conversation.
Our pleasure.
Great. You know, Right Here, Right Now is brought to you each week by Right Choice Services, and you can learn more about Right Choice Services at rightchoiceservices.com, and of course, that right is spelled W-R-I-T-E. Listen to Right Here, Right Now live every Tuesday morning at 10 a.m. at rightherewrightnow.businessradiox.com or download the MP3 version of all of the interviews on the Right Here, Right Now website. I am your host, Tim Morrison of Right Here, Right Now. Join us next time when business leaders, entrepreneurs, and professionals come together to discuss the power of the pen and its impact on their business right here, right now.